B-Pod Studios.
Three-time Super Bowl champion.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we welcome to the desk.
You like it, right?
Nice hot dog slice. 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're touching it. Troy Brown is in studio. He's brought to you by DN Van Lines. When moving your home or business, choose Felger's Mover DN Van Lines. An improved mover for the Department of Defense and the top choice for Boston's pro athletes and Felger-like celebrities. DNVanLines.com. Nothing I like more than reading scripts that another guy's getting paid for. Hey, Troy Brown is in studio. So you saw the end of the Chicago game, I would imagine.
Yes, sir.
And when you have a kicker that ultimately cost you the game.
It was tipped. The ball was tipped.
Anyway, you have a kicker who cost you the game, and he's done. He had four posts in the game against Detroit. In all honesty, what is it like to be around them after the game? Because people were consoling him, but
I've had the luxury of having.
I just can't say you never had a kicker you had to worry about.
I was with Goskowski,
not even in college.
Adam Vinatieri. Now there was I did play with Missing Sisson.
Oh, that's right.
So that was my rookie year.
Yeah.
So I did play, which prompted us to bring in 60-year-old Matt Barr.
So
I did play. But Sisson, he was a great guy. I think he's like some kind of neurosurgeon now or something. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, he's doing pretty darn good for himself.
But he's always like missing left and stuff. Like he's hurting your brain.
But nerves were a problem for him in his rookie year. So I think we came in the league together.
So you worked your ass off all game, and then that happens. Like you lose on a missed field goal or like an extra point or someone shanks it. What is that like in the locker room? Is it tough to not just go off?
Yeah, well, no, it's not tough not to go off because you understand it's still your teammate. Like I said, those two guys that I played with most of my career, they were like a part of the group. I mean, because they were working out with us, lifting weights with us, running with us, all those things. So it was like things like that happen from time to time. But fortunately for us, it never really happened to us in those clutch situations. I don't even know what that feels like. Not even in college, because my senior year in college, we won Double A school Marshall back when I played there. Mm-hmm. There were two brothers on the team. The older brother was the starting kicker. He overslept during the week, and the coach benched him. And actually, the night before the game, mm-hmm. and he brought his younger brother in to be the kicker for that game. And his younger brother actually made the field goal.
Oh wow!
So there was no need to be mad at the starting kicker because his younger brother, got all the glory.
Yeah,
and became the hero of the game. So I've never been in a situation where we had a kicker to miss it in a clutch situation like that, and to have something a playoff spot on the line.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that feels like. So I couldn't really explain it to you to be mad at a kicker.
Sure.
And wanting to beat him up or, just exile him from the rest of the team.
Are they kind of looked at in a different light? Like, I know that you said these guys are with you and they're working out with you, but I don't think that that's that way with like all the teams now, is it? Aren't the kickers kind of kept like aside? Like, when everyone else is practicing, they're doing their own drills.
Yeah, they're doing their own thing over there. But again, Adam Vinatieri, you couldn't ask for a cooler kicker.
Of course.
In the world. So those guys were treated like, they weren't treated like regular kickers. Like we had Matt Barr. He was treated like a kicker. but guys talked to him, but he was like, Matt didn't want any part of the weight room.
Sure.
Parcells knew it. I mean, and Parcells treated them like a kicker. But Adam, those guys, they were with us all the time. They hung out with us, and I think it was like, who was it? Matt Barr and like Mike Saxon. We brought him in. And we had Pat O'Neill, who couldn't punt the ball more than 20 yards in the air, It was like, I swear, these guys were like the kickers, like the Chuck Knoblauch. What did he have, the yips or something?
Yeah.
I mean, they actually got that bad where you were afraid if you were standing in front of Pat O'Neill at one point that he would kick you in the back of the head with the ball. I mean, seriously, if you guys go back to like, 94, 95, when those guys were kicking for us,
uh-huh.
it got that bad with them, man. Like, dude, you've been doing, you got drafted to come in and kick a football.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think it would be that difficult for you to kick the ball higher than 20 yards.
Was it something in practice that everything was fine, and then when it came into a game, you were shaking everything?
That's how it would be, man. So we hired some old guys, some old veterans to come in and finish up seasons for us, man. So that it was you know, we kind of treated those guys more so like kickers and
like crap.
So and like, right. Even to the point like where Mike Saxon went out one night, he got beat up really bad somewhere downtown Boston, man, in a fight. He came in all black and blue.
Oh, really? Like a bunch of fans?
Yeah.
Like, you said, okay.
So, I don't know who. Somebody beat him up really bad, man. So
a fan of the band set.
No. So, okay,
punter.
So this was right after the game?
Somebody beat him up. No, it was he went out. It was probably like 2 days before again, like on a Friday morning, he came in like just beat up really bad. You have to ask Zolak like about it.
He came in beat up really bad.
Why would we ask Zolak?
So it was like
Zolak
and the guys instead of you know, guys like being pissed off wanting to find out who did it, it was like they were laughing at the dude, man.
Oh my god, so yeah,
that's probably why. I wasn't gonna be able to help him. I was like 5'9", 5'10", you know, 175 pounds. I mean,
it's probably walking into tables, knocking over drinks. Whoops.
Oh, man.
The yips.
So from this weekend, what did you take from that Chargers win? Because, I mean, it was a strange game in that, you know, for as dynamic as Philip Rivers has been all year,
yeah,
he didn't look that great.
Yeah.
However, I mean, the other side of the ball, I mean, you know, Bosa's going to be giving Tom Brady's nightmares as well as.
Well, I think out of all the teams out there, this is the Chargers are the most complete team.
Mm-hmm.
Out there offensively and defensively and special teams as well, because I think they return the ball pretty well too, which is key in postseason play. Special teams, I think, plays a huge role in a lot of games. I've been a part of a few of those. So, but, you know, I think they're the most complete team. But I do think that Phillip Rivers provides the most stationary target for the Patriots to deal with in the playoffs. So,
yeah.
I mean, so that's a plus for the Patriots. I think that he won't be able to escape like the rest of those guys will,
mm-hmm.
and make plays with his feet, even though he made a couple in the game yesterday. But, again, I think it's just the most complete team. And one thing I do worry that I think the Patriots may get an edge on is that they're traveling back to San Diego.
Yeah.
And then flying back again.
Why?
So that's talking about 4 3,000 mile trips.
Why would you do that? So, that's right. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, in less than 8 days. So that's 8 or 9 days, whatever it is. And that's a, you know, unless they're lying. So, but I figured they would stay out here somewhere, stop in New York somewhere, find a place to practice, use the Giants or Jets facilities or something, and, you know, and just hang out here on the East Coast.
Yeah.
For the next few days.
And then you got the cold.
And
from when you played, I mean, just how could you see it immediately on the other team? Like if you were playing a West Coast team that usually, or a place that played in warm weather, and or even like Miami, and they came to Gillette and when it was, you know, snowing or cold, could you immediately tell?
Yeah, most of the time you could tell. I think the one time where that kind of bit us in the butt was like when Oakland came here in 2001.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So we were like, oh, yeah, they come. It's gonna snow. Yeah, we got this one in the bag, you know. Man, they came out throwing that ball around, man. And, you know, Jerry Rice and Tim Brown catching the stuff.
And then you cheated.
who said that?
The refs were obviously paid off.
Yeah, the call is what it was. You know, it was the rule at the time. Yeah, his arm was going forward. That rule no longer exists, I think, but... Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time, it is what it was.
All right. So but the flying thing is confusing to me. So you're on the team plane, and it's not like, you know, you're on Spirit Airlines, you know, strapped in the back. Like, why would that travel affect you like that?
That's a long time to be on a plane, man.
Yeah. I mean,
and again, it's four trips, four 3,000 mile trips.
Yeah.
You know, and what, 8 9 days that they came out here on a Friday or something? So that's a lot of just sitting on a plane. I mean, I drove in this morning, took me an hour or something to get here,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like I played a game last night. I mean, I was a little stiff getting out of the car. I know I'm a little bit older now, but just imagine those guys playing a game, and a physical game that they just had with Baltimore. You know, a defensive struggle, a lot of big hits. And you got to get on the plane and fly back, you know, 3,000 more miles, and then come back and do it again in 5 days.
What's the thinking then on the Chargers end? What's the positive of that?
I guess they get to go and sleep in their own beds, and they get to go see their families if they're not, you know, missing their family or something or whatever. I guess that's the only positive I see to it, but I figured it would be better for them to stay out here, you know, and just get to practice in the cold weather, all that stuff, and throw the ball around, see how it feels, and... You know, and I thought that would be more of a positive for them. But the fact that they're going back, I mean, I think that that weighs in the Patriots' favor.
Lamar Jackson got killed yesterday. And so when you see, you know, this pass rush and just how good it is, and the way that they're doing, like we were talking about this earlier, on the majority of their plays, they had seven defensive backs. I mean, it was a very strange, and I don't know if that was just specifically geared toward what the Ravens were doing.
But
when you saw the way that they were playing and you look at what the Patriots have to offer, how difficult is this going to be for Tom Brady?
Well, I just think that what the LA did was they played to the strengths of Baltimore, and that was the fact that Lamar Jackson could run very well. And so they just went with basically all small guys on the field and daring them to run the ball against them, which they did to a little bit, to, you know, sort of good against San Diego, but against the Chargers.
That's all right. We're not going to
call them the Chargers from now on. So
I said San Diego twice.
If there was a drawer to put money in every time I said San Diego, I'd be dead broke, man. But yeah, but anyway, yeah, they put the little guys on the field and just dared them to, you know, to throw the ball. And those guys were fast enough to catch up to Lamar Jackson most of the time, you know, and make plays against him. And, you know, but I don't think they'll be able to play that way against the Patriots, because, I mean, if the Patriots run the ball the way they have against teams like that, you know, they would absolutely destroy them in the run. But they made the right adjustments from the first time they played the Ravens and put some smaller guys out there to deal with the speed of Lamar Jackson. But, you know, they had the right call, did all the right things, made all the right plays for the most part. But, you know, that defense of the Chargers, man, they are fast too. Mm-hmm. But I also know that they countered that speed, and Melvin Ingram hopping around, jumping around blocks.
Yep.
They'll find a way to make him pay for that. You know, with some edge runs, or, you know, some quick screens or some draws, and getting the ball to Tom Brady's hands pretty fast. But, you know, but if they ever get to a point where they can't pick some of that stuff up or get rid of the ball fast, it might be a long day with the speed they have up front with those defensive linemen.
All right, Troy Brown in studio. We'll continue to talk to him, 617-779-0985. We'll be right back.
Toucher and Rich.
The Sports Hub. We're touching and Rich, Troy Brown in studio.
Is this the best team theme song of all time for the Chargers?
I used to love this song.
Yeah, this one's all right.
I used to love it. Yeah,
it's not bad.
Yeah,
I mean it's no Super Bowl shuffle.
I can think back as far as like Chuck Muncy.
Yeah, what year
West
do you think
Chandler?
This was?
Yeah. Dan Fouts, who you guys love so much. You guys love him on TV, right?
His commentary is just, you know, flawless. It's like he's actually, like, watching the game.
Yeah.
Well, he's a math wizard. He can always figure out. He can always figure out what's going on in terms of that. All right, so you got something coming up, Troy?
Yeah, man. We got the, I got a raffle with the Patriots, man, with the Patriots Foundation. And I'll be having, I don't know if it's breakfast or lunch. Somewhere, was it brunch? Somewhere in between. It's too early for brunch, I think. Like at 9:30.
Turn your mic there, Troy, a little bit. Right. Like other way. There you go. Perfect.
Too early for brunch. No, that's
my Dan Fouts moment.
Yeah. No, you drink the night before, and then you.
They can drink the night before.
And then you recover at
and you 9:30. Can meet me at 9:30 at CBS Sporting Club. And then you get four pregame field passes, two VIP parking. For the game on Sunday, so against the Chargers. So, but you can find it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you can go to Patriots.com to find other information about it, too. So
I just retweeted it, too, from your account.
I appreciate that, man.
Do you have people, like, where's the strangest place someone's come up to you and asked for an autograph?
At the toilet.
So, okay.
At the urinal, not but the toilet would be even worse. At the urinal,
you know so
what do you say? Someone comes up to you while you're going to the bathroom, and like they say, "Can I have your autograph?"
Yeah, like they want to shake your hand, and then like want to get an autograph, and I'm like, dude, you know.
I'm
using my hand. You know, like, dude, because I'm at a urinal, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
You invade my space. So, And it's just, yeah, it's a very, very awkward moment.
Sure.
When that happens.
Well, the weirdest thing now, though, is that the big thing isn't even autographs. It's hearing the click of the camera phone.
Well, that happened in place,
right?
My wife's gym. They had to send out.
I haven't had that one happen. Not that I know of, anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Not that one yet. So.
And my wife's gym, they had to send out a letter saying, talking about FaceTiming and videoing in the locker room.
Is that because Giselle was there?
No, that's the kind of, oh, that's, you know, SoulCycle.
Was Antonio Brown did it a couple years ago, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. Well,
and then he FaceTimed the coach's post-game speech.
Yeah, yeah, and Tom was talking trash on the Patriots.
Talking trash on the Patriots.
Yeah.
So that was, that could be a little violating there, man.
Oh, yeah.
You can catch some guys walking by.
Oh, sure.
Which I think he did.
Yeah, I think there was a guy. He was, you know,
walking by, so yeah, that's a little dangerous.
Yeah, and that Antonio Brown thing is just.
That's another situation, man, that's just.
What do you do?
I've never been a part of something like that. I mean, I think the closest I've been is probably, you know, God bless his soul, Terry Glenn. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, tremendous athlete, tremendous player when he was out there, man. But, you know, that was the closest I've been. And I think, was it 2001 when Bill just suspended him for the rest of the year? They got the week 5 or 6 or something. He just shut him down for the rest of the year.
Called him she. I remember that.
But that was Parcells. That was Parcells.
Oh, it was Parcells
did that. Yeah, Belichick suspended him in 2001.
Oh, that was a different coach.
Yeah, Parcells is like, you know, they all worked with him, you know, and through his issues and whatever he was dealing with.
What was the she thing? I don't remember that.
That was Parcells' nickname for him.
Glenn had a hamstring, right? Glenn had a hamstring. It took him a while to come back, and the press asked how Terry Glenn is doing, and Parcells said, look, she's doing fine.
Yeah. That was always, Parcells was always like that.
Yeah.
He always had something like that going on. But it was a lot of stuff going on. He didn't really want to draft Terry at that particular spot. He wanted to go defensive line. And, you know, Robert was, you know, wanted this and that or whoever, Bobby Greer, and ended up drafting Terry Glenn.
Yeah,
he thought it was a whole bunch of friction between he and Terry, but it really wasn't. He was just kind of guiding him through a lot of stuff, and he would always talk to guys like that. He'd always tell Curtis Martin he was, you know, the one game wonder, you know, and started calling him Boy Wonder, all this stuff. So he always had stuff like that going on.
But Ted Johnson is now working here, and he was on the air, and he said that you would be surprised how much Bob Kraft, how much of a voice he has in player acquisition. Even now with Bill Belichick, did you get that sense when you were playing?
I wouldn't say I did. I did with Belichick. I probably got that more of a feeling about that when I was actually when he was with Pete Carroll, then obviously with Belichick. I mean, with Parcells, just because everything came out. You know, you want me to cook the dinner? Let me at least suffer some of the groceries. All that stuff was going down, and then those 3 years with Pete. You know, there was the rumors about, you know, Robert actually going down and working out to Bucky Jones in Connecticut and all that stuff, you know, and so taking it, whatever. So it was all those rumors floating around, too. But I got more of a sense of it, too, in the sense that Terry Glenn was actually in the meeting room with us. Mm-hmm. And I knew how he handled his situations. And part of how he handled it was just to go straight to Bobby Greer, straight to, you know, upstairs, somebody's office upstairs, maybe Robert or whoever. And voices of disapproval with the game plan for that week.
Oh,
so that's kind of how I knew they were involved somewhat in the situation and how things would get handled. So, yeah.
Well, that's okay. So this is kind of weird. I just got this, and I don't mean to zigzag around, but I find this interesting. You were talking about how much flight, you know, across the country with the Chargers is, you know, could possibly affect their game. I mean, you're right. That is four major, although it'd be three at the time that they play. Still, cross country trips, 3,000 miles. This is from our big Joe Murray just tweeted this out. So apparently the Chargers will be just the sixth team to travel three time zones in back-to-back playoff games of the Super Bowl era. The previous five teams are 1-4. And they had the back-to-back. And whether or not that means, you know, that's the reason.
Play.
So
it is the square play.
It could be.
The sharps are all on the other end.
But, I mean, you're right. I mean, that is enough to, you know, kind of maybe kick your ass a little bit. And it's not just the travel. It's the time zone. It's, you know, it's
also where you're seated in the playoffs, I would imagine, if you're having to travel.
Sure. I mean, that could be part of it as
well.
Chargers
could have beaten Baltimore before. They would have won the division, and you wouldn't have had to worry about this.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, Joe Murray, I mean, think it through logically. All right, so you guys get the week off during the bye week. Belichick gave him the week off. Are you still going into the facility, or are you just staying away?
Well, yeah, no, you would have practice. I mean, two or three times that during that week, maybe.
Right, but he gave him off like.
But he gave him off like
Friday, Saturday, Saturday.
Only if you're a hurt guy would you go back into that building. You know? So it was, most guys just kind of hang out, you know, and around the house. Maybe a couple guys may get together or something, watch the game. And
yeah.
So, but yeah, most guys I knew I just kind of chilled out and just watched the games and.
So you would watch the games?
Nothing.
Did you get anything out of it?
I would watch all of them, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. So would you have like a rooting interest ever when you watched the games?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really, unless it was one of those years where we kind of like, I think it was 04 where we wanted Pittsburgh to lose so we could have the home game, the AFC Championship game at home.
Sure. Right.
But other than that, you know, yeah, you're just watching them and trying to figure out who you're going to have. But you always wanted to play at home.
Yeah,
that's right. Just natural. I would be lying to say I didn't care who we were playing. We'd go anywhere and be there. You know, but yeah, you would want to play at home.
Is there a switch? Is there a postseason switch? Like, you know, near the end of the year, the grind gets kind of tough and maybe the play, people take their foot off the gas a little bit. And then once the playoffs come around, like, should we expect a next level out of the Patriots?
You should. I'm still getting that feeling I used to get when I played.
Yeah.
Like doing it when the playoffs start, man, I get hyped.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, it's great.
I'm ready to go play and knock some heads and everything else, man. So it's just like it's a feeling I can't explain. And I can't get rid of it. Nothing I can do to replace it, anything, man. So, I get hyped up. And
you have nowhere.
Most of these guys should naturally get, you know, take their game to a whole other level. Because that regular season tempo, all that stuff is out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you feel that way and you have no outlet. It's very dangerous.
Outlet, man, so watch out. Next Monday, have your helmets on.
So I mean, this team, we've talked about this all season long. We still don't know how good they are. I mean, other than their record, you look at their record and the fact that they're the
same. You couldn't figure it out from the last 2 weeks?
it's been
Buffalo
pretty,
and the Jets.
Yeah, that Jets team was
quite a challenge.
They only missed seven starters on defense.
But now you see the Chargers who have, you know, they've been impressive almost all season long. As I said, Phillip Rivers didn't have the greatest game, but, I mean, defensively they looked really good. How do you see this panning out? I mean, this is the most unpredictable of all the games coming up this weekend, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so, but I think because, like I said, I think that Phillip Rivers gives them a stationary target. They're usually pretty good against guys like that, getting pushed up the middle somewhat and getting a little bit of pressure on somebody like that and making them think twice about throwing the football, holding on to it. They're usually pretty good about that.
Yeah.
So, on the flip side of things, I think offensively, they got to prove that they can throw the football,
yeah,
you know, to win some games. So, and where we are on that, where I am on that, I'm not too sure about that. You know, I know we spread the ball around against them in that Jet game, you know, but again, I could have put my 6-year-old out there and let him spread the ball around too.
When Buster Screen's your best corner.
You got guys not even showing up to meetings
during
the week, you know. So I'm ready to go to this New Year's party in New York City.
Yeah, they just said, Todd,
the rest of them are ready to get down south.
Yeah, this is Bulls' last game. Who do I have to impress?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they've got to prove they can throw the football. They got to prove that Dorsett can make plays and Hogan can make plays. And then I trust these guys to go out there and make them, because at this point, you got to depend on everybody to get the job done.
All right, I want to ask you a little bit about the Brian Flores and the kind of coaching search. I know you probably don't know him that well, but just the kind of guys that you believe, what the characteristics are for head coaches and what you would look for in one. We will be back, but here is John Wallach, who cannot wear his Invisaligns during the show, unlike me.
No, you're a stud, man.
Unlike me.
Don't lose your retainers, man.
I know. That's,
yeah. Well, you're going to have to wear
third grade.
You're going to have to wear a retainer the rest of your life, according
Pretty
to
much,
my orthodontist.
Yep. That's right.
Did you pay for yours?
My retainer? Not yet. No,
you're Invisalign.
I have.
I would like to see you with braces on. Really, yeah, that would be pretty cool. Yeah. How old are you now?
You get relaxed.
They make them. They make them with the like. You can get the colors in them, the blue.
Sure, I get loose. I like it. How about that?
you just sit there and you can't.
For a while. I'm comfortable. It's what, week 20?
Yeah.
I'm good to go, man.
It feels that
it just
way.
Feels like
listen to you guys talk about edibles and everything else.
Yeah. It's the playoffs. This is playoffs, Troy, John. Get used to it.
Yeah, I'm hyped.
Troy, why can't Rich get high?
Bring your helmet, too.
Check it out.
Troy, why can't Rich get high off of edibles?
I have no idea. The hell you
eating them too fast? Too slow? I went 3 cubes this weekend.
I don't know.
And?
Nothing.
Really?
3 cubes. Nothing.
Are you sure they gave you drugs?
Yes.
They didn't rip you off? I mean,
no.
If I took three cubes,
this is a reputable place. 3 cubes.
If I took 3 cubes, they'd have to put me in a straitjacket.
Wow.
Now I don't react well to that.
Got all these people now reaching out like Kush 420 at 354 and saying, hey, dude, I'll get you high. I'll smoke
Rich
you.
Rich is a superhero.
I'm not kidding. Something weird's going on. I've tried now that it's legal and I can't get high. I don't know if it's a weird thing that I've got.
So many dealers that have taken this as a challenge.
Been doing it too long.
No, you're immune to it. I've never done it. That's the thing. I've never been high.
Well, there's no excuse if you took 3. I mean, something's wrong.
I took 3 cubes.
There's something's nothing. Wrong. Because I took 2 cubes 2 weeks ago and I had to go to bed at 8 because.
Because
we had a bunch of people over, and I didn't believe that any of them had taken them. And I started getting super pissed off because I was all paranoid. So I said, I must retreat to my bedroom. But, yeah, if you can take 3.
Yeah, that was...
Wow. And you don't even really drink that much.
I drink on the weekends, you know, casually.
Yeah,
so, like, I don't get drunk all the time.
Oh, yeah, I do. All right. We'll be back here at the headline.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, the Sports Hub.
Hey, this is Super Bowl champion Troy Brown.
Three-time Super Bowl champion.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we welcome to the desk.
Troy Brown.
You like it, right?
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Troy Brown is brought to you by DN Van Lines. When moving your home or business, choose Felger's. Mover DN Van Lines, as he receives money from me reading this, an approved mover for the Department of Defense and the top choice for Boston's pro athletes and celebrities, dnvanlines.com. Troy Brown in studio now. Troy, a lot of talk is surrounding Flores and why he would get all this head coaching attention. You know, you see guys that are massive X's and O's, guys that fail. You see guys that are all hyped up and they can't do anything either. In your experience, what are the keys for a professional football coach? What would you look for if you were hiring someone?
Well, I just look for guys most of the time that, for whatever reason, they have the ability to gain the attention of people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just can't figure out why they have that ability, but they do. And if you can capture the attention of people and get them to follow and believe in what you're saying, and you know, and guys kind of just gravitate to those people. So I haven't been around Brian B-Flow like that. You know, I know him. I think he was more of a scout when I was playing. He was in the scouting department then, so he wasn't really around the team as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from what I hear about him, I think the guys just love him. And they gravitate to him, and they listen to him, and they believe in him. So that's one of the main qualities. And then after that, do those guys really trust him? Mm-hmm. Do they trust the guy, and can he motivate people? And obviously, the X and O's part of it is a huge part of being able to transfer over into a head coaching job. As we've seen, so many coaches make so many bad decisions compared to what we see around here.
Yeah,
with Belichick, you know, and that crew. So obviously, that part of it is a huge part of the deal too. But I understand he's a very intelligent person, very smart guy. And again, if you can just gain the trust of those guys and get them to follow and believe in what you're saying, then, you know, to me, I think it's just those are kind of the qualities I think you got to have to be a head coach.
I'm sorry, Rich.
Do you think McDaniels has those qualities? Because he seems like I don't know how well you know him.
Yeah,
but he sort of seems like a pussy because he wouldn't take any of these jobs.
No, I just think I think he has those qualities of getting guys. I played for him, you know, a couple of years there when he became the offensive coordinator after Charlie Weiss left,
mm-hmm.
and he's been around pretty much the whole time Belichick's been there since 2000. So,
was it tough to take him seriously at first? Because I mean,
he was basically the guy that was drawing the cards and holding the cards up in the huddle. back in 2000 when he came. So he was a young pup, man. He was 22, 23 at the time, maybe. So if that. So he was, I mean, you know, but you know, I respected everybody, you know, joked around with everybody and spoke to everybody. You know, I never mistreated them or anything like that. You know, but you know, some guys would, you know, play jokes on him, you know, say whatever, you know. But yeah, he was just that's what he was. You know, but you got to start somewhere. But I just think, yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's a great question. At this point, you know, with after you know two jobs that he decided not to act on.
He's like
and
afraid
and back out of.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say he's afraid. I think he's had that experience where he's had when he went out to Denver, and when you go out to Denver, and again, a lot of it comes down to how much control do you have. So
how much control would you give him?
Well, at that particular time in Denver, he was a first time head coach. He was really young.
No, but like now
and now,
yeah,
I think you got to give him some. Just give him control over being able to bring you on and bring your coaches and your and,
sure.
And pick your players.
Oh wait, you
pick your players.
You give him the opportunity to pick
control.
The players.
Yeah,
because the Browns would do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how a lot of these organizations are run, and I don't know the ins and outs of a lot of that part of that side of the business. But if you're a 3-4 defensive coach, and you got somebody picking 4-3 defensive players for you, more than likely, it's not going to work out for you in what you want to do defensively as a coach.
But shouldn't you be flexible in terms of that? Don't you think a coach should come in instead of just going, this is the way I do things, look at the personnel and say, we have the personnel to do such and such, instead of forcing your own concepts?
Well, I think there's always room for compromise with anybody. But if you come, I'm not saying you should be able to go in and, I mean, just pick every single player that you want. You got to be able to earn some of that too.
Mm-hmm.
But at least be able to pick some of the people you want to work with.
Sure.
The coaches, obviously, you want. I mean, sure. And then if you what Josh is, he's an offensive guy. Can I pick my quarterback? You know, can I do stuff like that? You know, can I pick a couple of offense receivers or something that can make plays for me that fit well into my system? Can I do stuff like that? You know, you want to pick some defensive guys? Fine, go ahead, do all that stuff. But let me pick the guys that I want to work with here on offensive side of the ball, and I can manage the rest of the team, the entire team, just by what my defensive guys say or whatever you guys want to do on that side of the ball.
Well, we know that Tom Brady apparently trusts Josh McDaniels. I mean, they obviously talk all the time. I know that many people say that, you know, when you work with Tom Brady, you have to over-prepare. I mean, you have to the one guy who prepares more than he does, which is almost impossible. In those early days, when you saw the two working together, did you see early examples of Josh McDaniels earning Tom Brady's trust?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think he always put Tom in a position to win. He worked with him, you know, one-on-one, basically being, you know, kind of a quarterback coach to him. A little bit. Bill O'Brien was that guy, too, as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those guys always, they earned the trust of Tom. And then they do a lot of stuff behind the scenes that nobody ever sees, stuff that I didn't even see. You know, Tom comes in early, days off or whatever, and was working with Josh, Billy O'Brien, and getting a lot of stuff done behind the scenes. So,
ever seen him?
And
like,
they just basically go. I mean, they go through stuff. Yeah, they get into it.
They
fought
on the sideline.
No, that's Bill O'Brien. Yeah. You ever seen Josh McDaniels? Yell at Tom Brady.
I've seen that on the sideline.
I've seen Josh say some things. You know, just basically, you know, telling him to look for this and look for that, kind of like he did on the sideline. You know, but yeah, he would voice his disapproval with Tom, and in the meeting rooms as well. So I think that's a part of, you know, I think being a head coach is that you can't really put anybody on a pedestal over the rest of the football team. Because the guys know.
Yeah.
And they'll see it, and they'll pick you apart for it. And things turn sour so one way or another, they'll let you know about it, you know, who your favorite person was. So, and then that's just, you know, another thing you can't do as a head coach is just blatantly show your favoritism towards, you know, certain people on the team. Pete Carroll was pretty bad about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was bad about that.
Yeah?
So, had me sour for a little while.
So, did you let him know?
Not really. I thought about it one game. I said, nah, I might not have a job tomorrow if I did that. The way I thought about doing it.
You know?
But, you know, so I just kind of just say, you know what, I'll go back out and play better, I guess.
How drastic was that attitude adjustment? Because, I mean, going from like Pete Carroll, and you told the story about how one time you guys almost revolted against Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And you guys, and what did Bill say to you guys? It was
just basically, you know what I know, you go back and get your helmets.
Okay, that's right. And you guys ended up practicing. And how drastic is that swing going from Pete Carroll, thinking that you've got a little bit of a power of a player?
Think about how drastic it was going from Parcells.
Yeah, that's
Pete Carroll.
That's
that
the
time.
Nasty.
Yeah,
swing.
Right. So yeah. You did one of these. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like you go from like basically listening to Bill Parcells yelling at Drew Bledsoe for throwing a high pass to somebody. God dang it, Drew! Who you think you're throwing the ball to, Sean Bradley? You know, or you know, just
somewhere Sean Bradley said thank you for
so I mean, you go from that to basically like, oh, you know, Dave Meggett, one of my favorite players of all time. You know, it's so disappointing that he comes in late to the meeting. We in Tampa, like getting ready for like you about to cry in a meeting. Oh, you know, man. I'm like, come on, dude. I mean, you know, you go from there, like Parcell, like get your crap and head to the airport, you know? So and get out of here, man. That's basically what it would have been.
Well, that's the main thing too, is that I heard, I forget who it was this week, and I don't think it was Randy Moss, but it was another ex-player who was saying the one thing about most professional football players is when it comes to having a new coach, they can instantly smell the BS. Like instantly, they'll figure him out. Yeah. Is this a guy I can push buttons with, or is this a guy that I respect? Like it almost takes what, a couple of weeks, a couple of games, and that's how you are going to judge a coach almost for the rest of its time there, right?
For the most part, it'd be hard for him to get that respect back. You know, once you lose it, it's hard to get it back, and that's just life in general.
Yeah,
you know, once they figure it all out. I mean, and unfortunately, most players are trying to figure that out just to see what they can get away with, because you know most guys probably they've been coddled and, you know, brought up without having very many consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to figure out just how far I can push this guy, what button and what buzzer I need to push on him, and you know, see when he reacts and when he doesn't react, and they take it to the limit.
And next thing you know, you're Antonio Brown.
You know, and like I said, I think Pete's a great coach in his own style, whatever, but his style just wasn't conducive to the team that we had at that particular time. So real young team, you know, and guys just got the sense, you know, especially hearing them talk about, you know, Megan and all the other older guys that he had on the team and that type of stuff and how important they are. And, you know, so guys just got the sense that, hey, you know, these guys can do it. You know, I just hang out with this guy and do the thing I need to get away with.
Right.
Show up late or whatever. And so that's just how it went, man. That's how it went. So, and unfortunately, that's how Terry Glenn.
Yep.
During that Pete Carroll time, he was probably at his worst behavior. Yep.
And Carroll let it go. All right. So if you're looking at this game on Sunday, which by the way I have the coach two basketball games, but if you're looking at this game on Sunday, who do you like in this the Patriots Chargers?
Well, I like I said, I think the Patriots just defensively they have an advantage. I think on Phillip Rivers when he wants to pass the ball. I think the Patriots secondary's been outstanding.
Yeah, they've been great.
You know, and probably one of the better secondaries in the league at this point. So I think if they can control the run, which we don't know yet, you know, with Melvin Gordon and the rest of that crew back there, if they can control that part of it, they have a good chance of slowing down that Charger offense. So, and then offensively, we got to figure, I don't know what we're going to get from them in the passing game.
Yeah.
You know, all the run game. You know, against a quality defensive football team in the San Diego Chargers. So, that being said, this is a fantastic team at home, the Patriots are. And the fact that they're traveling across the country, I just think, you know, the Patriots have a really good chance of winning this football game. You know, if anything, the flights would wear the San Diego Chargers out. That was a very physical football game they were in against the Baltimore Ravens.
Right.
So, I just think they have... They play with a different passion when they play at home.
I'm told
I think that changes a lot of things for the Patriots.
I'm told in the other room the Chargers are 8-1 on the road.
They're pretty good on the road too.
Yeah,
after yesterday's game.
Yeah, so that's it'll be a really good football game. I think the Patriots they've got the edge in this one.
Would you like them in Kansas City?
The Patriots in Kansas City?
Yeah.
What I've seen on the road, I wouldn't like them on the road any place.
Yeah,
nope.
So I just don't have that confidence they can go out there and generate some energy.
So go Colts, right?
Go Colts, which is the hottest team in the NFL right now.
Yeah,
they beat a lot of quality teams on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Smoked Dallas.
Yep.
Smoked Tennessee twice. And they're the hottest team going right now.
All right, well, Troy Brown, it's always a pleasure. And hopefully Rich eventually will be able to get high.
Thanks for all your advice, by the way. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we go with the blue or the red.
Okay. Let me ask you
braces.
Did you or did you not have Invisalign one time in your
I had Invisalign.
Yeah, so what are we talking about here?
Yeah, I didn't think I thought about the real braces too.
Yeah.
I was going to go with the red and blue for the Patriots. Obviously the wire was going to be silver. So I had the colors down.
So. How long?
It'd be nice to see with some real braces on, though.
No, you like? I'll see what I can do.
How do you know?
Very. That's the answer.
Yeah. Maybe if you get some THC in your system, you might go ahead and get the real braces.
I'm going to come in with headgear one morning. It's all going to kick in at once.
Don't sleep on that.
Had the whole head. Dude,
I did that once already. We're not going back there.
You should have seen the crap I had to wear.
Oh, you had the Frankel. That's right.
Yeah, and then everything went haywire. I got the Invisalign. I'm not paying for it. But the he is. But how long did you keep him in a day?
Oh, man. Pretty much all day.
Yeah.
All day long, for the most part. Every time I would, like, you know, if I did something on TV or radio or something, obviously I would take him out. It was just too distracting to talk with him.
Yeah, see, it's
I kept
weird.
Feeling for him with my tongue, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I keep him in. What do I care?
You sleep, sleep with him in.
I got him in right now.
Oh, I can't tell. You're true Invisalign, professional, man. True professional.
Invisalign. I have so many speech impediments, you can't tell.
Can you do the edibles with the Invisalign in?
I can't. My mind can't handle the edibles, and yet I keep doing them and doing them, and nothing changes. All right, Jim Irsay had a lot to talk about in the Indianapolis locker room after the win this weekend. We'll play some of that for you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.